Tommy Side presents. Lion.
Hello and welcome to Log In, the podcast from Termsoc, the University of Plymouth Computing Society. With me today are Ben Lee.
Hello.
Our special guest presenter, Ms. Gemma Peter.
Hello.
And me, Rich Jeffrey. Hello. As always, we're here to cover the geeky things that have caught our eye over the past fortnight or so. And as always, we'll start off with everybody's lovings and hatings. So, Ben, what are you loving and hating?
I've been loving Mac OS X. Well, I've been using an iMac, a fairly old iMac, for the last few weeks. And I'm actually quite impressed with the operating system. It's not perfect, but it is rather nice.
So there's like more positives than negatives.
I made a list of the positives and negatives, and although there are a lot of both, most of the negatives were just niggling little things. Whereas most of the positives were fairly big. It's a good system, I do like.
Well, I like the way that you're positive about the GUI for a change.
To be fair, I still do have a hotkey set up to bring up a terminal, but you know, I don't need to do so often.
Okay, and hating?
Hating moving house. I moved just over a week ago now. It was supposed to be about a week and a half ago, but the letting agency took so long sorting the paperwork out that we were delayed by 2 days. And then it took the rest of the week to get all my stuff moved back up the hill. So a house around the corner from the one I moved out of about 8 months ago. And I'm all moved in but not properly sorted out yet. It's been a bit irritating not being able to find all my stuff because I couldn't remember, for example, where I packed my bloody pen.
Right, yeah. Meanwhile, my loves are, well, my loving at the moment is Scrubs on telly. It's been months since we've seen a brand new episode of Scrubs, and finally it's come back, and I'm relatively happy. However, I'm hoping for the best that it's going to be a good series. I have heard a few bad things about it, like halfway through the series there is a purely clips show.
Nice.
Which, unlike with Friends episode, where the clip show is kind of mingled quite happily into a storyline, this thing is fairly it's fairly clips episode-esque, and hopefully Channel 4 are not going to show it and get on with some more good stuff.
Well, you know, I like a bit of Scrubs. It's one of those shows that I don't actually set out to watch at a specific time, but if it's on, I'll watch it.
I remember the time when I encountered somebody in a pub having a discussion about what they watch on television. I mentioned Scrubs, and they went, "Oh, I really hate Scrubs. I don't watch it." And apparently, she hates Scrubs despite not watching it at all. And her basis lies purely on the fact that her boyfriend made a satiric comment about it, and now she hates it.
Well, that's, you know, sensible reason to hate something.
Yep, not shallow at all. As for hate, probably the endless amounts of work over the 9-to-5 period, every
nice.
Single day, Monday to Friday.
I'll swap if you like.
Well, I'm sorry, but your option is nights.
Well, yeah, but, you know, anything for some, well, almost anything for some money at the moment.
Mm.
I wouldn't mind working 9-to-5 if it meant someone paid me for it.
That's very true. But you will get immensely irritated with the technical support that they offer.
Fun.
As for you, Gem?
Mostly my loves this week. PHP 5. Lots of nice objecty, shiny things. Much better than PHP 4, which I had to hack to pieces to try and support something vaguely resembling objects.
Surely PHP 5 has been, you know, around for a while now. We switched over to it on Termsoc at least a year ago, and probably closer to 2 years.
The last place I worked didn't update their servers much.
Obviously. Mm. Was this the same place that had MySQL 3?
No, that was the place before.
Wondrous.
Well, what have you been hating then?
Mostly the weather. I've been travelling to work on a motorcycle every day.
And spending half an hour drying afterwards?
Mostly my boots have been wet throughout the day so that when I go home from work they make a nice squidge sound.
That well, sounds lovely.
At least it's not like you've just got dry and then you have to go back out in the rain. You're still wet.
Most days I've been able to wring out my socks.
Nice. It's been very strange. Ed mentioned the other day that, you know, the last day of sun was the last day he had to do some work, and he was all annoyed that he had to stay inside, but thought, oh well, I'll be able to go out tomorrow and it'll be nice and sunny. And it wasn't. And it's been that way for 3 weeks now.
It's fated.
I also hate the weather because it washed away the fibre optic connection for the bite mark servers that we're hosted on.
Oh dear. Yeah, the weather has been incredibly weird, I must admit.
It seems to kind of go from very bright and sunny to very wet and crap. I remember when I was moving some of my stuff out, it was raining when I was upstairs in my room. By the time I'd carried my bag downstairs, it had stopped raining. And by the time I was, you know, 5 minutes along the road, it was baking hot. And then within half an hour, it was raining again.
If this is global warming, I definitely hate it.
It's one of those media-hyped words. I think changing it to climate change is definitely the way to go, because this is not warm.
Britain will be one of the few places in the world to have to actually get colder, because it will disrupt the Gulf Stream. Why does Britain always get the shitty luck?
Alas. Right, so moving on from our wonderful loves and hates, let's get on with the stories. So let's start off with you, Ben.
Mine is one I saw on Dig earlier this afternoon. RIAA sued for using illegal investigatory practices. A grandmother who's been sued by the RIAA for file sharing is suing back, arguing that it is knowingly engaged in, quote, one or more overt acts of unlawful private investigation. Basically, the situation is that in Texas and a few other states, only a few agencies are allowed to collect evidence for use in court. The police, obviously, the FBI, and agencies like that. And anyone else has to have a license. Not only the agency used by the RIAA not have a license, but the RIAA, they knew this and ignored the fact that they needed the license and went ahead anyway.
Wondrous. That sounds like the kind of mentality that I expect the RAA to go with.
Yeah, but they've shown again and again that they're not sort of doing illegal things to further the cause of justice in an American way.
Whatever justice is when it comes to them.
Well, yeah, exactly.
Depends on how rich you are.
Well, I suppose I love the principle of the RAA, where they will fight for a record company's copyright case.
Even if the record company doesn't want it fought for.
A very good example being Network in Canada, who happens to own the rights to things like Avril Lavigne and Bare Naked Ladies.
That's the one I was about to bring up, where did they pay the court costs of a family being sued by the RIAA?
Well, incredibly bad publicity. That's the way they were approaching it.
They paid the court costs for a legal... for the defence against a legal action that was being conducted on their behalf. And it just seems a bit crazy when things like that can happen.
Mm.
Obviously the label don't want to sue. Why do they go ahead and sue anyway?
It's because it's the RIAA's strictest belief that they should sue the pants off anybody for the sake of it, to show that they are the strong arm of copyright law. But alas, it just doesn't work.
Yeah. I mean, the person in this lawsuit I've just mentioned here had apparently never heard of file sharing before she was sued. Mm. And I It's describing her as a grandmother, and I can perfectly well believe that.
Yeah.
Just because, you know, the elderly are not generally the type to be even necessarily using it. I don't know if he is particularly elderly, I suppose, but not the type to be using a computer much. And generally, you know, it's the teenagers and fairly young people who are downloading music illegally and whatever.
Then, you know, they wouldn't have heard of BitTorrent, they wouldn't have heard of Pirate Bay.
Well, it certainly is perfectly possible that various people older, you know, middle-aged or older people have heard and do make use of things like this, but it's not the norm, I'd say.
It's the minority.
Well, exactly.
If copyright cameras were something sensible, then all of the things that old people would be interested in would probably be public domain already.
Well, classic works of literature and whatever all are.
Yeah.
To be fair, I think a lot of stuff that isn't, as I'm assuming your point was, a lot of stuff that should be public domain isn't.
Yeah.
And I don't think that people have the rights that they should have to use the things that are public domain.
I don't see how it encourages artists to create work by extending the copyright beyond their death.
Yeah.
They're not going to create anything new when they're dead.
But then again, you've got the equal flip side of the coin, where with most record company cases, especially writing credits, people who have been in the career for a long period of time can start to lose their rights. For example, in a couple of years' time, the Beatles will be public domain.
Certainly for books, it's something like 70 or 90 years after the author's death.
Yes,
books and works of literature and written things.
I've got a feeling it's... I'll have to double check this, but I think it's a case of the recording rather than the...
I see.
Rather than the written words.
If they didn't think that the copyright term was long enough when they recorded it, surely they wouldn't have recorded it.
Well, but then again, when you're a newly fledged band...
I suspect a lot of, in fact, a lot of musicians, not necessarily, not just a lot of new musicians, just don't care. They're doing it for the music, not to get the most out of the copyright laws.
And also, more importantly, do you think that half these people believed that they would still be popular and still be famous in 50 years' time?
Half of them probably didn't even believe they'd be alive in 50 years' time.
Did you really think that when Paul McCartney and John Lennon and George Harrison and Ringo Starr, and also the person who came before Ringo Starr, who I can't remember the name off this very moment in time,
Pete Best?
Yes, Pete Best.
Not George Best.
Not George Best. I've made a drunken footballing drummer. But no, I can imagine them sitting down in the cavern. How on earth do you think they'll go, I think we should challenge the copyright laws, because I feel that in 50 years' time that works will be exposed to public domain.
Exactly, you look at things like the Who, and they weren't planning to be, you know, 60 years old and headbanging at Glastonbury or whatever. Yeah. In fact, at the time, they made statements quite to the contrary. So, you know, Roger Daltrey's probably trying to avoid my generation in gigs at the moment.
Especially after the Zimmers did it.
Well, I suppose so.
The Zimmers, in case you haven't heard, are a group of OAPs who appeared on a BBC documentary who basically made a rock band, and their defining act was to sing My Generation.
If I remember correctly, their total age is over 1,000 and their average age is about 80. I believe the youngest member is 69 and the oldest is over 100.
People try to put us down,
talking about my generation,
just because we get around,
talking about my generation.
Things they do look awful cold,
talking about my generation.
I hope I die before I get old,
talking about my generation. My generation.
You know, Roger Daltrey has a bus pass now, so...
Does he really?
He's over 60.
Yes, but has he claimed his bus pass?
According to him on Top Gear some time ago, yes, he has.
I don't know, because that's a bit like... It's a bit like when Keith Richards said that at some point in his life, he slaughtered his father's remains.
Well,
you know, it's like, look at me, I'm so rock and roll. Admittedly, yes, bus passes are not really seen as rock and roll, but I can imagine that he may have played it for laughs.
Quite possibly, but you know.
I'm assuming he still probably drives a flash car.
Well, my point was that he's certainly eligible for bus pass.
True. You can see how these things lapse off into random things and how we end up speaking for an hour and 25 minutes about nonsense. But I think we might have to move on from there because I've got a feeling that we're lapsing into rant, unless anyone's got any further things they want to mention.
I think we can sum it up as RIAA bad.
Actually, one last thing I wanted to mention about the RIAA is that apparently they set up a site in the past couple of days.
Oh, yes, I did see this when I was looking. Wasn't it the MPAA?
It might be the MPAA, actually. But similar case, essentially setting up a false website that essentially is like a honeypot for trapping people file sharing.
Basically, it was all download movies faster with our new spangly software. And what it would do is, firstly, it would report you to whoever it was for trying to download things illegally. And secondly, it would check your computer for other things that you'd already downloaded.
Yes.
And report you for that as well. Apparently the site disappeared pretty quickly after it was revealed, since it is actually a crime.
Yes.
It is entrapment.
If the actual rights owners were offering the material for download, surely it's legal to download it from them.
The MPAA are also feeling like they're above the law.
Well, yeah.
Especially after you heard the whole thing about this film has not yet been rated. So this film is not yet rated.
No.
It was a documentary all about sort of the secrets of the MPAA and... You're basically being very negative about them.
What do movie ratings mean? G means general audiences. No nudity, no sex, and no drugs. Violence must be cartoonish and minimal. And there may be language that goes beyond polite conversation. PG means parental guidance. There may be strong language, like shit or ass. And brief nudity, like showing off an ass. Or light violence, like getting kicked in the ass. PG-13. Parents are strongly cautioned, as in, look out, Mom, here come more shits. Bullshit, dumb shit, little shit, shit-faced, and shithead. Fuck is also allowed, but usually just once, so filmmakers are urged to choose their fuck carefully. A simple fuck you is okay, but referring to the sexual act as in, may I please fuck you, or I enjoy getting fucked, is totally unacceptable. If a character says that, especially while abusing an illegal narcotic, the film is rated R. R means restricted. No children 17 or under without parent or guardian. There may be sexual themes, frank sex talk, sexualized nudity, tough language, and tough violence, like 1,000 handicapped orphans decimated by a hail of gunfire. But if the film depicts realistic baby-making in a position other than missionary, acts involving oral sex with females, anal sex, fetishes, more than two humans, or what the MPAA deems aberrational behavior, that film could get slapped with an NC-17. NC-17 means no children 17 or under, period. An NC-17 may range from a senior citizen gangbang to a foreign Pedro Almodovar film. But art films make people feel funny, especially the ones with aberrational behavior.
And they sent a copy to be rated, which it didn't actually get a rating in the end, but the MPAA made a copy of it for their archives, because it's a important work in regards to the motion picture industry. And of course, that actually breaks their own laws.
Nice.
One thing I found ironic is when I went to see Pirates of the Caribbean 3, the pre-movie anti-copyright advertisement didn't actually say the word piracy in it anywhere.
Nice.
That's a bit of a shame, really.
Oh, is that the knockoff Nigel one?
Is it knockoff Nigel, or is it cinema? It's the experience that counts.
Yeah, I think it was that one.
It was the second one. Again, we discussed this at the previous one, but I still can't see the point of having an advert telling you how it's great to see things in the cinema whilst you're sitting in the cinema. watch a movie.
The people watching it in the cinema are not the people you're trying to get to go and watch it in the cinema.
Yes. Okay, well, I think we should move on from there.
Okay, what's your story then, Morning Glory?
What's the story, Morning Glory? Actually, I want to a quick update, just to cover this one for argument's sake. Last week we talked about Jack Thompson calling Manhunt 2 a murder trailing device. A few days after we recorded that, the BBFC, which is the British Board for Film Classification, ranked the game as explicit and therefore couldn't get a rating. They basically banned it. So that means it cannot be released in its current form.
I can't say that's necessarily a bad thing. I don't really see the point in things so extreme, but it does kind of play into Jack Thompson's hands when something that he's advocating against is banned.
Yes.
Even if it's nothing to do with his advocacy.
Now,
I'd like to see it released, and released legally, just to piss him off.
Well,
I'd never buy it.
I was going to say that the banning probably doesn't really sound like a bad thing, because imagine free advertising and all that. Because yeah. Imagine you can sort of the idea was sell it in America and say, you know,
this was banned
in the UK, etc. But unfortunately, in America, it got a classification of adults only by the ESRB, which is the American equivalent of PEGI. And because it's adult-only rating, Sony and Nintendo won't touch it, because they've fitted a policy saying they will not put adult-only games on their console.
So they've, you know...
So therefore, back to the drawing board to basically remodel it so that it can be passed. It probably just involved removing quite a lot of gore.
Yeah.
Yeah, the excessive violence. You know. Anyway, that was just a quick update on what was happening regarding a previous story. Orbo. It's a system created by a company called Storn in Ireland. Essentially, they believe they've invented a free energy machine. Their principle is works by magnets.
Bullshit.
Now, supposedly, this is currently the 5th of July when we're recording this. Supposedly, yesterday... there was supposed to be a gentle demonstration of this in public after having some internal reviews by a load of scientists. However, due to apparently some technical difficulties involving the lighting they're using, which is making it too hot, it's not working. And it's...
As opposed to technical issues caused by it not working.
Yes. It was still broken today. Apparently, there's been some updates on the webcast, because they've got a camera set up that showing it online, that they've seen a few engineers working around it. But as of yet, absolutely nothing. Now, this thing is a bit of a... people are not certain about it.
Remind me, conservation of energy, that was, you know, proved, 400 years ago? 300?
It's been definitely deemed impossible on multiple occasions. There was an entire, there was half a Mythbusters episode devoted to testing out these free energy systems.
Right.
And none of them really worked brilliantly.
It's been known for centuries that it just can't happen. There is... no way for it to happen.
Mm.
There is no way to put some energy into a device and get more energy out, because the energy has to come from some... It was Isaac Newton, wasn't it?
Yes,
dynamics and
but...
all that. Certainly, it was stated centuries ago. It hasn't been proven wrong yet. Mm. I'm sure maybe someone will prove him wrong, but I doubt it.
Yes. But
just to me, because it makes logical sense. To get energy out of something, you have to put energy into it.
But as we have yet to see anything come out of this project, despite there's been quite a lot of hype towards it, I have to admit this.
Yeah.
People are interested in it, much like, I don't know, car crashes.
It's too bad things can't run on hype.
Yeah.
Shame.
Well, no, the iPhone runs quite well on hype.
I don't know. The British government would never have any more, you know, energy requirements if it could run itself on hot air.
Yeah. Gordon Brown, our new Prime Minister, I can imagine he may have... we're going to be more environmentally friendly. We're going to get all our spin doctors to blow down pipes when they talk.
Maybe they should attach their spin doctors to dynamos.
Oh, beautiful ways. I would support any party that believes in energy created by politicians. But yes, only time will tell whether Orbo is actually a working system. But on the flip side of the coin, there was on the news today that some scientists at the University of Southampton have invented a generator that works by natural vibrations. It doesn't produce a lot of energy. It produces about a few millivolts, well, microwatts, they've said here. But they say it's 10 times more efficient than similar devices. It's going to be used primarily for wireless sensors and things.
All right.
So I can imagine something like that where they're using energy that doesn't often get used on, say, machines. You know, because quite often machines give off a bit of vibration as the motors work, and using that extra energy to do something useful.
Yeah. As long as there's a bit of energy coming into the system, I suspect that most things vibrate at least a little. And depending on how sensitive it is, it could be pretty useful.
Moving on, Ben?
My story is one from BBC News, a warning about data ticking time bomb. The chief executive of the UK National Archives has described the growing problem of accessing old digital file formats as a ticking time bomb.
Nope.
Says, society faces the possibility of using those years of critical knowledge because modern PCs cannot always open old file formats. And it mentions a partnership with Microsoft to ensure that the archives can read old formats. And there's a lot in here about, from Microsoft, talking about, unless more work is done to ensure legacy file formats can be read and edited in the future, we face a digital dark hole. But the thing is, this is Microsoft saying this. Microsoft, who base a large section of their business model around the fact that if you upgrade the file format every few years, people need to buy the latest version of the software to use the new file format.
To be honest, it's definitely the wrong company saying this.
Yeah. And they bring up the Office Open XML format as, you know, it's an open international standard. These are no longer under control of Microsoft and are free for access by all. Actually, I wasn't aware that it was a standard yet.
Nope. As far as it comes to ISOs, it did not win the ISO standard.
No.
It was won by the open document format.
I believe it's still undergoing, you know,
confirmation
for ECMA, but...
But yeah, I perfectly agree. I think that the only word processing software that really uses this standard... Ooh, that happens to be Office 2007.
Exactly. The very fact that they've got their own format, their own standard, in air quotes, their format for Office documents, is not exactly backing up their case. Because, you know, ODF was there first, as far as I'm aware.
Yes.
This isn't confined to the digital world. I can't even read what I wrote last week.
That was a bad joke.
Whereas, you know, fine, sure, XML in itself is probably it's a better format than their old one. Sure, I'll give them that. But just because it's XML, it's a better format, it can be... You can work out what it means. But... That doesn't mean it's better than any other option.
You're right, though. In comparison to older Office Word type files, there has got a lot better. Because, admittedly, you know, the older versions of Word had fairly small file sizes.
Yeah.
But as they started piling on more and more features, it started to grow in size. yeah. until it got overly huge when it came to Office 2003. And now 2007 stripped that right back, so therefore you get... It's now a lot smaller file sizes. But it's perfectly true that ODF will offer the same features, and it's ridiculous how Microsoft seem to believe that their format is the international standard when it blatantly isn't.
It's not even a international standard yet.
No, it's only a standard in the realms of Microsoft.
It may become a standard in the future, but it isn't yet.
No.
And it's, as far as I understand it, it's a flawed standard anyway. Over the years, things like XML have had to build up hacks for backwards compatibility. For example, Lotus 1.2.3, I believe, had a problem where it didn't treated 1900 as a leap year, when it actually isn't a leap year. Mm. Because although it's divisible by 4, it's not by 400, and as it ends in 00, it needs to be divisible by 400 to be a leap year.
Hmm.
So early versions of Excel did the same just for compatibility's sake. Now, I think this is a mistake in the first place, but because they should have just, you know, converted when importing and exporting a Lotus 1.2.3 file, but they actually programmed it into the entire system.
Hmm.
And now that is actually part of the draft standard. File or programs implementing the Office OpenXML format must treat 1900 as a leap year, even though it isn't.
Yes.
What do you suggest we do to leave these old bits of cruft from old programs behind?
If just take the error into account when importing and exporting the file. You don't need it actually built into the code. Excel should never have treated 1900 as a leap year, except in the bit of code that deals with Lotus 1.2.3 files. Certainly shouldn't try and force that on other programs. I don't know whether the standard requires the program to do so or just the import and export, but the fact that they're making it standard is bad enough.
Standardising on buggy behaviour.
Yeah, exactly. I always knew Microsoft have low standards.
It might be worth of note that as of last week, I believe, Bill Gates is now no longer the richest man in the world.
Really? Who is?
He's been overtaken by a Mexican, whose name escapes me.
Do you have any idea what this Mexican does?
He is a mogul in telecommunications. He owns a budget airline, and he also has most ownership in Prodigy Internet. Carlos Slim.
Nice.
Who's worth $62.9 billion versus Bill Gates, who's worth
$59.2 billion. Hmm. But he has given a lot of money to...
He has given a lot of money away to charities. So
didn't gangsters do that?
Giving away money to charity doesn't exactly excuse dodgy business practices, but I don't think that comparing Bill Gates to a gangster is necessarily fair.
Mm. So do you see him more as a Robin Hood type character?
No. I mean, he has never actually gone out or ordered somebody harmed in any way because of anything related to business.
But yes, so the reason why Carlos Slim is actually quite rich at the moment is because he hasn't put all his eggs in one basket. Because he's got stocks and shares and bits and bobs. He's like a crazy entrepreneur. He's like the Mexican Richard Branson.
He's got lots of pies.
He has lots and lots of fingers in which you can put many, many holes in many, many, many pies.
Although I do find it a bit odd, going back to the BBC article, that they warn that data on floppy disks may be in unreadable formats, because in general, you know, older file formats I've found seem to be simpler.
Well, according to the article, which I've just got up in front of me, it does say that a spokesman from the National Archives has said, if you stored something on a floppy disk just 3 or 4 years ago, you'd have a hard time finding a modern computer capable of opening it. That's complete rubbish. That's total and utter rubbish for a very obvious reason. Modern computer, plug in floppy disk drive, ooh look, a computer that can read floppy disks.
Well, exactly. Certainly, you know, file formats used in the early 90s and earlier were likely to be, if you just wanted a text file, you had a text file. I remember downloading, a year or so back, I downloaded a copy of Minix, which came with what called itself a doc file. It was something, readme.doc. And it was just a text file. And similar. But, look, you're right, that there is a problem, but it's not as serious as they seem to be making out.
I personally reverse engineered a file format for Superbase Files, an old Windows database. It wasn't actually too difficult. I opened up a hex editor and just poked around with the binary until I found the data that I wanted from it.
I do remember your, you know, kind of ongoing saga over several months of Perl scripts that would convert us into something vaguely human readable or whatever it was.
I did manage to get most of the data out, but the thing that really helped me was when I found the documentation for the file format.
Well, exactly. If it's documented, then it's much easier, but, you know, Microsoft Word documents have never really been documented until very recently with, you know, the standard formats.
Hmm. I'd like to see what comments they have in their code.
Yeah, right.
To be honest, this article does contain quite a lot of
hype
and kind of tabloid-isms.
Yeah.
It does say just here that Mrs. Sini, who's the person from the National Archives, said that some digital documents held by the National Archives had already been lost forever because the programs which could read them no longer existed. What on earth does that mean?
Why on earth didn't they store the programs along with the data?
Exactly. That is definitely overhyping a situation. I can understand that they're saying we cannot read the documents because there isn't they haven't found a way of translating them into a more modern system.
But
it's still easily possible. All data is stored in a similar way. You've just got to find a way of reading it, a bit like what you just said about finding documentation for a file format.
I'd be surprised, for example, if Microsoft didn't have somewhere in its vast corporate archives a copy of Word 1.0 for Windows.
Well, I find it quite impressive that Word 97 couldn't read Word 2 files, which was really weird.
Wasn't Word 97 kind of quite a big leap on?
Yes, but interestingly, I think later versions can read Word 2 files now. I don't know why I did it, but I can imagine that being very good examples of where they've dropped support for something and haven't put it back in.
Hmm.
But this article does mention how there is critics towards Microsoft's approach of having an open standard.
Here's another question about media formats. Do you think they're always going to keep that icon for the save button of a floppy disk?
I've noticed, if you know about the Tango project, which is an attempt to create a free set of icons for every system to be able to use, I think they use a little picture of a hard drive nowadays rather than a floppy disk.
Hmm. That would make sense. To do that,
I can't remember how recognisable it is as a hard drive.
Oh yes, on this one, for example, on the word processor I'm currently using, it does have a picture of a hard drive and a pointy arrow. I'm assuming that I might actually be using the Tango fonts.
They do look quite like the Tango icons. I don't know if it's exactly them, but
yeah,
it does look similar.
But so therefore, I can imagine that floppy. They'll eventually move away from having floppy disks as the picture, but who knows, it's kind of a legacy thing. People know that a floppy disk generally means save the file, and hard drives are fairly unrecognisable because people don't often see them.
Yeah.
Little grey boxes.
Yeah, but some users won't know what a hard drive looks like, and thus will go, well, how is that meaning save?
Well, to be fair, it does have a kind of arrow going into a greyish box, which I suppose would help.
Admittedly, when I first saw it, I thought it looked a bit like a safe rather than a hard drive.
I assume it is meant to be a hard drive, rather, or possibly just, you know, a computer. At least on this one I'm looking to. I can't see yours properly.
Mine does look definitely like a hard drive. Oh, yes. That definitely looks a bit like a computer.
But yeah,
actually, that would be a good working way, is to have a pointy arrow towards a computer rather than towards a picture of a hard drive. It's very geeky, they're choosing a hard drive as a picture.
Although I don't know, because if, you know, a non-technical user would assume that it's already on the computer, why does it need to be put on the computer? But the thing is about using the floppy disk icon is that in a few years' time, there's going to be people who will never see a floppy disk because new computers just don't come with floppy drives anymore.
No, not as a standard feature. I think Dell now is an optional extra. It has been for the past couple of years now.
I haven't used a floppy disk in years. I have emulated floppy disks on occasion when had a disk image and needed to use it as an emulator boot disk or something. But
that is the biggest problem. That's the reason why floppy disks are still hanging around on occasion, is because...
Because older computers need them to boot.
And sometimes even newer computers need them to...
Update the BIOS.
Like updating the BIOS, because some companies still haven't got to grips with computers without floppy disk drives.
And generally the alternative is a Windows-only piece of software.
Yes. And even then, some... I'm pretty sure there's still some motherboards that will not do that.
Well, I'm sure.
Anyway, I think that's all the stories for tonight, isn't it?
I think so.
Okay. To cap it all off, what we are drinking today. Now, we're having we're having a fairly laid-back session here. We decided to have a random mix. So, Jem, you've got...
Coke Zero.
And how are you enjoying that?
It's gone. Enjoyed it.
Oh, good. So your experience of Coke Zero was quite good, seeing as that was your first time. I'm sorry, that sounded so bad. It sounded better in my head.
Well, I have just been, most recently, just drinking water. Before that, I don't know what kind of tea it was.
Oh, it was good old Red Label. Sainsbury's Red Label is definitely a good kind of tea. It's good value for money for the quality of tea you get.
Not the absolute best, but still very good. It's a very good solid tea.
Yes.
Good content. And I don't know what you've been drinking.
I've been drinking most of the same thing.
Fair enough.
A cup of Red Label, mug of water.
I've also been drinking fridge caramel milkshake.
Oh, is that the limited edition?
No, it looks like a standard edition.
Ooh, that's fancy then. Is it any good?
Not bad.
Okay, well, I think that's everything for tonight then.
I think so.
Okay, so say goodbye to Ben.
Goodbye.
And goodbye to Jen.
Goodbye.
And it's goodbye from me. Goodbye.
Login was presented by Ben Ali, Gemma Peter, and Rich Jeffrey, and is a production of Termisod, the University of Plymouth Computing Society.